Real Business Owners.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 48 with myself, Trevor Cowley, Kel Goodman.
Huh? Is it 47?
It's 48.
You're right. I'm sorry.
It's 48.
Oh, God.
So the one time I'm actually right, I like that.
I've been working on 46 all day.
No, yeah, exactly. Well, we got 47 that you're going to get to next week, but that feels good to be right for once. Somebody tried to correct me and was wrong. You know, Kel's corrected me a few times on episodes.
Sunshine. Journal entry.
So we've got an amazing guest. There's not enough good things I could say about him, but I will say that, you know, he's an individual that we turn to for information, education, in a lot of different areas. And I mean, how many times have we done business with Jim in terms of all of our different companies that we've leaned on him for agreements or issues that we've had, and whether it's court cases or being sued by previous employees or
crazy clients.
Yeah, crazy clients or whatever.
Clear some of those up for us, fine-tune some things.
This is our Superman. He's our Clark Kent.
Yeah, right? And we have to charge for this episode because he charges by the hour. And
it ain't cheap. So we've got a wonderful friend in Jim Park. Jim, tell us a little bit about your background. You're an attorney, a CPA as well?
No, I've dodged that bullet, luckily.
No?
Yeah, I got my accounting degree.
I don't know what the accolades are in terms of, if we go down the list. It might take 10 minutes to go down the list, but...
No, it's boring. I got nothing, but... I love what I do. I love trying to help my clients and everybody, you know, really kind of get a game plan to accumulate wealth, you know, through business strategies, then protect the wealth through proper asset protection strategies, and then pass that wealth downstream through proper estate planning strategies. And I call the whole package like estate engineering, because it's really engineering the wealth and then
of the individual, taking a look at every angle. You know, how could somebody come in and penetrate this or pierce your wealth? And so you're basically building the fortress
That's how I met Jim.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that, you know, so I met Jim through
after
you.
After my divorce.
Yeah.
And seeing how brutal that was and how draining financially it was, I wanted to set things up to be better protected, obviously, moving forward.
Yeah.
At that time, I didn't work for the tax accounting firm I worked for anymore. I had my business, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were using Dave Hall's firm for our accounting stuff.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
Dave Hall and Dave Ben Hall were like, hey, you need to go see Tony for your wealth stuff. And I went and talked to Tony, and like, no, you need to go see Jim first and get it all set up right to be protected, you know. And so that's kind of how I came in contact with Jim, and I went and sat down with him, total stud, and then I started calling him for everything right after that. So one of the coolest things that I learned through Jim in the beginning, after going through a nasty divorce, was like, hey man, if you ever go get remarried, you don't really need to worry about a prenup now because you got everything set up and established before your next marriage. If you ever get married again, it's all set up in your trust, it's all organized. So unless you change those things when you do
get married,
you know what I mean, like you're protected. You don't even have to have that awkward, you know, prenup conversation, you know. That always stuck out at me for some reason. So I was always like, this guy knows everything. I'm gonna call him for everything now.
Like, dude, what color shoes should I buy, bro? White or black?
Dude, I'm colorblind.
And he's like, dude, black don't get dirty, so
that's
buy
my
black.
Wife says.
He's always watching your back. But let me ask you this. How many times have you seen some of the work that you've put in place and some of the work that you've done in terms of protection get put up in maybe the court system this or that, and you've seen the work actually do what it was supposed to do, which is protect the individual? I'm sure watching that come full circle is just like, has that happened a few times and you've seen it unfold and you're like, holy shit, I'm glad that you ended up coming to me and we ended up going through this process and getting you taken care of?
Totally. And that's a great question, because a lot of the stuff, a lot of the planning, it's academic.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm honest, right? It's academic. And then there's court cases that kind of ferret stuff out over time.
Yeah.
But like LLC laws, everyone's heard of an LLC now, but it's relatively new still. Mm-hmm. I mean, the LLC, the asset protection components and charging order protection, it's still being developed, and it's all state by state. So it's largely academic until the rubber hits the road in courtroom.
Yeah.
And
what do you mean by academic when you say it's largely explain
it's like
that.
Commentator. So
it's people, like basic shit. When you say the academic, like we're just going through what we were taught in school or not getting too crazy. What
kinda,
do you mean by
kinda,
that?
Kind of like that. We're just so, going like through people the, just say things, right? It's okay. it's like the legislature creates some statutes,
okay.
And the statutes lay out some a law, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But no one really knows what that law means. It's just academics will go through and interpret it.
Yeah,
they'll say,
perception.
Oh, yeah, okay. This is what we believe this means. And, you know, in Utah, this is the new rule. Or in Wyoming, you know, okay. The exclusive remedy is this. Well, that's what the statute says. But it's like until a court actually interprets that law and says this is what it actually means.
Yeah,
it's all just talking heads trying to say this is what it is.
Does that make
arguing funner?
So yeah, they leave the laws in the gray area to see who's the best attorney in the end.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
To let them argue it out.
Exactly.
There's no hard line in saying this is exactly how it is. It's here's this and we can interpret it this way, and then somebody's like, well, we interpret it this way, and then both parties have to, you know, submit their arguments
totally
in the way they interpret it.
Dude, that's how it goes down.
Same thing with CPAs, man. Like, a new tax deduction or code or tax law changes, and it's like, you know, one CPA will be like, I ain't touching that. Like, I'm staying way over here on it's black or white, right? And some guys are like, no, there's a lot of gray around this. Like, you know, I think you can move your money here and write it off here. And
if you set up this entity and do this.
You can ask 30 CPAs the same question and probably get 20 different answers, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's true.
Same thing with attorneys.
Yeah. And it's all, you know, what's your risk tolerance?
Yeah.
Like, none of us want to do planning based on, like tax planning. You don't want to do tax planning based on audit risk. You know, it's like, well, there's only a 40% risk of audit here, so I'm in, you know.
Yeah.
You're just like, no, I don't even want to deal with that crap because the feds and the IRS are a joke.
It's a headache.
You know, it's just a nightmare dealing with them. And that's what I did.
it's a nightmare dealing with them.
Yeah. I got my accounting degree, worked for a bunch of accounting firms, and then I decided I worked for Morgan Stanley, Dean
So
Witter.
You originally went to school to be an accountant
and pursue
that, and then you made an adjustment during school or after school after you hit the accounting world?
He realized chicks don't dig accountants, they dig attorneys, dude. Yeah. So he switched gears.
Dude, it's,
and now he's got a motorcycle,
weird,
a badass motorcycle jacket, you know.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't married, he'd have all the chicks. But luckily for his wife,
she chose her. The chick that – so I met Holly.
Yeah.
She's incredible. So I saw her. I was like
– I need to be an attorney.
I need to
do something to impress her.
Yeah, exactly. But she was an accounting major, so I switched majors. I'm like, hey, free tutor, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to get in. I'm going to weasel my way in. And I asked her for help, and she's like, no.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, you're on your own. I'm like, well, what if I do it? Will you review it with me? No.
Yeah.
You do it yourself.
And you're like, well,
she's like,
I'm gonna,
I had to. You do it.
You're like, I'm going to be an attorney after this. And she's like, okay, I'll
too,
help.
Oh, dude, she's the best, but she's tough, man.
Yeah.
She's a tough cookie.
You said that, actually, in one of our last trips down there to Nevada when we had that one case. You were saying on the way back, like, dude, my wife's legit the smartest chick I've ever met.
She's brilliant.
Person, not chick.
No, that's the truth. You know? Yeah. So that's the truth, but she'll kick me in the balls if she needs to, as hard as she can, and she won't help me up.
So tip number one when you're hiring an attorney is always hire an attorney that's got a smarter wife, right? Because they push them to be actually really good attorneys.
Well, dude, I will tell you this. A lot of people that are successful that I've seen have success in their life that has somebody like that behind them, they don't ever get too high on their own supply or their own ego, right? Because there's always somebody at home ready to kick them in the nuts and bring them back down to earth to let them know, hey, man, you're nothing special. You're a human, right? Just like everybody else. So don't – I know – because, I mean, let's be real. With our podcast and social media, we're starting to, you know, get more and more attention. And it can obviously go to your head if you don't have somebody there kind of keeping you grounded, right? So it was the same thing even with Cam. You know, the whole time when he was making his millions of dollars, he had a solid lady at home basically smacking him around. She's the puppet master, right?
She was stealing his money and hiding it from him so that they could actually build wealth.
Yeah.
She was legit stealing from it. She stopped spending money on taking it. This is what we're going to do. She started shoving it in cash into places he couldn't find it.
And basically saying, we're poor. We're poor. Like, she would just, it was repetitive.
He told
me
one time.
Get to work. We don't have money. I'm like, you've got millions of dollars, but in their mind, they stay broke because of the way that she acts towards him. And so his hunger never died. He was always just in grind mode because she was telling him that they're still broke as shit.
Yeah.
And she's taking the money and she's doing whatever she's doing with it, wealth management, all
super
that.
Super valuable lesson there, right?
Big valuable lesson.
I mean, you just live within your means, and it's like the more money you make, you know, you never want your expenses to rise at the same level as your income. But that's what people do.
Oh, my God.
You know, Holly, like, literally.
I'm guilty of it. I've done it.
No, it's easy.
And you get a little better after some hard lessons. But, dude, it takes hard discipline to, like, really live. I mean, if you can live on just 50% of what you generate and then figure out how to pay your taxes and invest on the other 50%, like, you could be set.
Yeah, you win, right? Yeah. You win. The goal is to win. But same thing. So Holly would give me, she'd, like, review stuff. It looks like you spent a dollar on a Coke. Where'd you get that dollar?
Yeah.
I was like, whoa.
Sorry.
I just wanted a Coke.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But she's like, that's not our budget. Like, it was awesome. I don't know if you guys have ever done this. Sometimes we'll even revert back to this just for fun, but we go back to like the envelope, the cash.
Yeah.
Cash in envelopes. Yeah. You get a budget, put cash in. And then that's it. That's what you live out of this little envelope for the month. It's a good test.
It's basically your budget for the month. It's your budget, and you just stick with it. You know, you'll spend it all on golf on week one, but you're broke for 3 weeks after that if you want.
Yep.
You know, you'll have to live with your decisions, right?
Yeah, you choose.
You know?
Exactly.
That's kind of like
you might have a Coke a day for the next 3 weeks, and that's all you're getting.
That's kind of how the whole book of Profit First is written about. Have you read that book?
No, I haven't. I've heard about it. Great book.
It's all about how, you know, his mom would put all these things into different envelopes on payday, and one was for the light bill, and one was for groceries, and one was, you know what I mean? And they always had that little fun money stash that they had to, like, really work at to get to. And then he basically wrote his whole book around that. He's like, you got to pay yourself first here, and that's why it's called Profit First.
That's genius.
And that's really what the whole book is written on, is living off the envelope model, man.
Isn't it interesting? Like, that's the whole thing. It's like the whole premise of what we do is we try to create wealth, and we try to help other people create wealth.
Yeah.
Because, like, the asset protection, it's who cares if you don't have assets, right?
Yeah. What,
there's nothing to protect, you know? And the estate planning, it's like, who cares if you don't have anything? So it's like it all starts at the, you know, the foundation is just creating wealth. And how do you do that? You do it by budgeting and being smart with your money and understanding good debt versus bad debt, you know, versus because –
Have you been in some crazy scenarios, some sticky scenarios in business in general where, you know, so a lot of the times when somebody goes into business, they're taking a step backwards almost in life because going to work for somebody else, you're guaranteed, you know, 80 grand a year or 100 grand a year or whatever it is on your salary. Did you ever have to take a step back when you originally started your guys' firm, or how did everything happen with that? Or did everyone come to the table with money, or... What's some of your struggle stories, or was there not a lot of struggles just going into business initially, or
no, always struggles.
Okay.
I mean, my parents, bless their hearts, you know, they're not wealthy at all.
Yeah.
Dad worked for the post office. My mom worked at a little place called Shopko. It's kind of like Walmart.
Yeah.
They're defunct now.
Yeah.
And then she worked in like a tortilla or a pizza factory, you know, just making ends meet.
Yeah.
Awesome. When I told them that, you know, I was going to go to college, they were super pumped.
Yeah.
Because no one had ever gone to college.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of lessons, you know. It was baptism by fire, basically. Just like, oh, yeah, that hurt.
When you came out of college, did you go directly into business for yourself? Or did you practice and work for somebody else for 5 years, 10 years before you decided to do your own thing? Or
so I worked at, going through college, they were actually paying for my accounting degree, which was cool.
Okay.
Was
your parents?
No,
the college?
My employer.
Oh, gotcha.
So it was like a tuition reimbursement. As long as I had B's or better, they would pay.
Okay.
But I started a collection agency. So I went in, I started a collection agency, and when I was in college, I went around, knocked doors, and I targeted like dental offices and just the dental profession across
the
board.
So when you were collecting, you were collecting in person?
Well, no. It was all just on the phone. It was just cold calling.
So you would sit in your dorm or you just calling people?
Sit in my basement.
Or your basement?
Yeah, we're a little bit at my mom's house, you know.
Okay.
But I would just go and I would call them and I'd say, and I'd send out letters.
Yeah.
You know, you prepare a letter series, at, you know, 30, 60, 90 day, and then you're like, okay, and we're going to
You had all your templates and everything, yeah.
Yep. And so utilized a lot of that money to pay for school, and then I kind of grew it and sell the business. Hmm. And that's when I was like,
I love business.
Blood in the water. Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh,
dude,
wow, that tastes good.
You know what I love? I love the telephone, dude. I'm so glad like we were brought up in phone sales because, dude, it's always going to be there. It keeps evolving, but it's communication. It's never going to go away. There's so much power in like the type of businesses you can build around the phone, dude. You know what I mean?
It's true. So, and just talking to people as opposed to written communication, you know, you can get a lot out of people. You can understand their feelings and emotions, and you can't do that in a text. In fact, I piss off more people writing a letter. Yeah. They're like, why are you screaming at me? I'm like,
it's a letter. I can't scream on a letter.
Yeah, I guess my tone wasn't exactly accurate.
Yeah, like, don't take the exclamation mark as that I'm on the top of the mountains yelling at you.
Yeah.
It's just,
it wasn't all in caps.
Have a good day, exclamation mark. You know, like, I'm not angry when I say it.
A letter sent to me, and I've always just thrown them away.
You did what?
Like that one guy, that one Roy dude tried to sue us because he said we broke his marketing agreement.
Yeah.
We're like, dude, we're way outside our marketing agreement. And then he went and used all the stuff he created for us for some other campaign.
And sold it off to somebody
else. And then tried
to
accuse us that we were using marketing techniques. Oh, no, stupid shit. And he sent me a letter, like this nasty attorney letter, like written to be so scary. And I was like, threw it away. Never heard from him again.
So Kel's advice,
dude,
if you get a letter from an attorney,
throw the first one
away
for the second.
Throw away the first one. If it's serious, they'll send you around.
They'll send you another one.
Isn't that true, though, to a certain extent?
Oh, dude. The truth is most attorneys are blowhards, right?
Yeah. They're basically pounding their chest trying to see if they can impose fear on somebody because we didn't get anything after that.
Yeah.
That was it.
No. It's all about, you know, if someone calls, it's like, well, let me send them a letter, you know, and it's like, you're almost better off just throwing it away. And if it's a serious matter, you know, it's a serious matter.
Exactly.
So you take care of it. Right. Because
but Kel knew it wasn't serious. He was like looking at it and was like, come on, bro. Like you're just sending it to like, it was all our materials. Yeah. We hired an outside marketing company to execute on an offer. Then he ends, and we continue to run the offer after we fired him.
Yeah.
And he's saying that it's his market. Like, no. But then he took all the
information. It was our pay-per-click account, so he was trying to say, we can't use his settings.
But we paid him for those settings. So we can then boot him and then turn it on and off ourselves. But we paid him for the work that was done.
Right.
And then he ends up taking the process that was put together and trying to sell that process to other companies saying, look, what this company was trying to do, look, I could do this for you. So he took the idea based upon him being hired to market it. He took it to other companies and said, why don't you guys market something like this? And started getting their ad dollars.
Yeah.
But then comes around and he was just a shady.
He was shady.
To be honest, he was a piece of shit. So let's just call it what it is. Like, I hope Roy listens to this one day.
There's plenty of them out there, you know.
Oh my God,
dude,
let's talk about that. I think we talked about this like last week or the week before. We were sitting there talking in my office, and I said, "What the sad thing is? It's actually a surprise now when people when they say they're going to do something, follow through.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone's blown away. Like, oh my gosh, this is a great. They actually did what they said they were going to do. And it's like, why are we in a state of business now in 2020
where that's
the surprise?
Right.
When back in the day, the surprise was a company didn't follow through with what they said they were going to do. But now it's flip-flopped.
Yeah.
It's just, it's
insane
really
who
to
wins
me.
Is like, who follows through the best, you know, in the long run? That's
in the long
wins.
Run.
In the short term,
I mean, how many
guys
people
that are grabbing cash and lose? Dude, we
how many
those
people
guys
have
fold,
we seen
though?
come and go, and we're still here? And everybody that's ever done business with us has said, they've done good business. They said they were going to do this. They did it, right? And so That's really all it comes down to. If you want to survive for a long enough period of time, just honor what you said you were going to do.
Do what you say you're going to do.
And sometimes
That's
weird concept. That's, you know?
It's nuts. Like,
if I'm going to sell you 4 golf balls and give you 2, like, I'm not honoring what I said. Cough up the other 2, right? Even as a damn kid when I sold golf balls at 8 years old, I honored what I said I was going to do. You know, like, it's not that difficult of a concept, right? Like, so it's insane to me that individuals have to be taught this type of stuff. And the fact is because that's now a surprise, I think it's actually easier to be successful in business because all you have to do is do what you said you were going to do. It's that simple. And then if you sprinkle a little bit extra on the top, a handwritten thank you letter or whatever, send them some company swag or a $20 Amazon gift card or Starbucks gift, whatever it is.
It blows their mind.
Blows their mind because, again, they're not used to getting what they said that they were going to get, even marketing companies, right? You have one knock on your door or slide into your DM or whatever, shoot you a phone call, and you're like, look, dude, I've already paid X amount of marketing companies, like, and I didn't get the result. Like, why? How are you guys different? I mean, we did this with SEO companies over and over and over, and nothing ever worked.
Right.
Right. And we got burned so many different times by SEO companies. And I'm not saying SEO is bad, but I will tell you this. It is difficult to run an SEO campaign. SEO stands for search engine optimization. Okay. If for those that are listening that don't know that, it's very difficult to run SEO nationwide. That's what I've really found out after hiring them. We're more of a nationwide company. So to be ranked organically nationwide, that is very, very difficult to do.
Yeah, you're competing against bigger companies that have already been spending way more money longer amount of time.
But I've heard that SEO can be somewhat successful if you're targeting a smaller town. For instance, the town that we live in, St. George, if that's all you can do business with based upon the way your business is set up, then you probably will have more success with SEO than what we've had. But the
have you ever marketed online, really?
Yeah. One lot. Yeah. We pushed out pretty hard.
Yeah.
So just so that you guys understand, Jim is a partner in a law firm called One Law. Tell us real quick a little bit about One Law in terms of all the different things that they do, because I believe that you guys practice in several facets of law, right?
Like, yeah, in terms of, we do primarily One Law, and it's the one isn't spelled out. It's just one.
Yeah, the number one
LAW.
One law. Yeah,
and a lot of people think it's like a nationwide firm or like a franchise firm because of the marketing that we do. But it's really just
you guys have done a good job.
Yeah,
with it.
It's just, you know, there's 4 partners, and we've got another 4 or 5 attorneys. So there's only, like, you know, 8 or 9 of us.
Yeah.
You guys are in Utah, Nevada, California, right?
Yeah. We got, licensed in Utah, Nevada, and California.
Licensed, and you're doing injury, business. I mean, what are all of the different things that your firm does?
So primarily specialize, the firm itself, kind of the hub is personal injury.
Okay.
Is
that the most profitable side of most of,
like, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, all the ambulance chasers and all the guys that I spent all my years I graduate, I get my accounting degree, you go to law school. Nobody in law school has an accounting degree. They all have, like, communications or, you know, whatever the easiest degree is.
Yeah, they try to just go the least path of resistance.
So then you get your law degree and then I go and I get a master's in tax law and here I am thinking I'm the smartest guy in the room, and I spend, you know, years making fun of the ambulance chasers, and I hate those guys. But really, at the end of the day,
they were the ones making all
the
money.
They're the ones, yeah. Jokes on me.
They're chasing the money. The ambulance is the money in that industry, right? And
totally.
So they can get pretty dirty themselves, right? Ambulance chasers, literally.
They can. I mean, some of their tactics are terrible, but you know what? Some of them are fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, we feel like we really provide a good service, and we help a lot of families.
Yeah.
But you're not telling people, like, hey, man, you got disabilities, you should go sue this company over here that doesn't have ADA policies on their website.
Oh, geez, yeah.
You know what I mean? Stupid shit like that.
No, that's stuff. That's why everyone hates attorneys, right? Mm-hmm. They generate these lawsuits and hurt people when just to make a buck.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hate attorneys as much as anybody because of some of the. I mean, some of them are just shysters.
So some of them, like, full on. Some of them purposely try to present an issue that maybe you weren't aware of to say, well, maybe this affected you or whatever, sign here. Let's get you a part or whatever, right, on some of the lawsuit stuff or
like class action stuff. Yeah. And I'm not opposed to, like, you know, helping because legit, like, people are underserved. Like, you either have attorneys or you don't. And people who don't have attorneys usually get clobbered because that's how the system's set up.
Of course.
So we provide, you know, we have a group of attorneys that they just focus on personal injury stuff, and they do it really well.
Okay.
Then we have another group. They do family law. They do, you know, they divorces help people divorce and child issues.
Custody and all that.
And I manage our transactional practice side. So I do, you know, the corporate, the business side, the contracts, the mergers and acquisitions, like the tax strategizing, things like that. So we do. There's a breadth of products that we offer. But yeah, by far the personal injury side is the most lucrative because it's the insurance.
Yeah.
That's also what enables
their checks never bounce.
Right. I mean, they're good clients. They pay if you can squeeze it out of them. But that's also what helps the people who are injured get a payday at the end of it, because the insurance companies, all they want to do is minimize anything that's happened to you.
Of course.
You're in a car accident, you get T-boned by somebody else, it was your fault.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
They want to minimize the payout, but they want to maximize on the hospital bill. In terms of hospitals billing insurance, right? They're freaking billing them. That's why, to be quite honest with you, I'm not trying to turn it political or anything. I do like the recommendation of Trump saying that hospitals should have
Set pricing
for what's going on. That is displayed, because let's be real. I mean, a lot of people are after insurance companies. They know insurance companies have money. So hospitals, right?
Price gouging is huge.
Yeah, that does exist. And so let's be real. If they're paying a lot of medical bills that are super expensive, and then somebody gets in a car accident and then doesn't have an attorney, they're like, hey, we'll give you $5,000.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And then they're like, $5,000? I'll take it that same case could have been $100,000.
100%.
So I'll tell you guys this right now. If you do get in a car accident, the first thing that you should do is call an attorney, because flat out, you're going to get 5, 10, 15 times the amount. We had a secretary that got in a car accident. And she could barely, she was doing this like
buy a Napa Auto Parts like delivery truck, right? Yeah. So it's a company.
It was like a buy a company. And she flat out said, I was like, what's wrong with your neck? She's like, I got in a car accident on Thursday. And she's like, I'm just dealing with the insurance company. They want to give me like $5,000, but my medical bills are already way over that.
And she was in pain, dude. She couldn't even move her neck for like, months.
I was like, you need to get with an injury attorney.
Yeah.
It's real. Flat out said that. So, I mean, it's crazy that they were about to give her $5,000. When her medical bills could have been tens of thousands of dollars, and she would have been stuck with the rest.
Especially when you don't even know what the long-term effects are going to be.
Exactly.
You know,
so make sure that you guys are. This is why we're friends with Jim. Jim's a smart guy.
Much, he doesn't do much personal injury stuff. No, I mean, what I like about Jim is he's entrepreneurial, man. Yeah, like, that's why I feel like that we've stayed in all these exchanges over the years of like him helping us with things, and then, you know, even looking at business projects with us, is like, he's an entrepreneurial mind more than anything, right? And so that's why we're doing stuff.
Well, that's why
now.
You started a collection agency in college,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, that an entrepreneur's mind is an entrepreneur's mind.
So that's
no
another
matter
tip.
What
that's another tip, you know, when you're hiring an attorney, man, like, if you're a businessman, like, hire someone that's business minded.
Yeah,
know? Dude, if I wish everyone in America would start they're a small business.
Yeah.
Because then they all say, oh, I'm not. And it's true. I mean, it's not for everybody. I think it is. But it's like, some people are just made to be employees for other people.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
It's the truth.
But it's the truth. And I'm grateful, right?
Yeah.
I need employees.
Yeah.
I'm grateful for that. But I wish everyone had an owner's mentality, not the employee mentality. Everyone would be happier. Everyone would make more money. But it's not the way it goes.
It's not the way it is. I would actually like it for the reason so that people could see how difficult it is.
Yeah. And right? Because
the America or a large majority of people are like, oh, they're a business owner. Like, you can go ahead and write a business owner off. They're lucky. They've got money. They've got it made. I just don't think that people understand how difficult it is and how many businesses struggle on a day-to-day basis. And some of these men and women that are running these businesses are working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and they're still only making 30, 40, 50 totally. Grand a year.
Totally.
Right? It's not all it's cracked up to be. You really have to go through some shit to hit some high levels in business to start making 100 grand, 200, 300, 400 grand. I've said this a few different times, and it's like beating a dead horse, but 64% of businesses either break even or lose money every single month. That shows you right there, that statistic alone, 36-ish, 37% of businesses are making money. And that doesn't mean a lot.
Yeah, some are very turning
some a profit. Might only be making $5,000 a month.
Look very successful, but a lot of money's going back into them, and the owners actually aren't even taking a paycheck yet. You know?
Right. They're not taking that penny.
I think if everybody owned a business at one point and then understood how difficult it was, they would probably be a better employee because they would be like, holy shit, I want to step up and do whatever I can to help this person out because the amount of stress this individual is under on a day-to-day basis. This is, I would say, being a business owner is almost like a drug addict. Drug addict, the first thing they think about when they wake up is the drug. The last thing they think about before they go to bed is the drug. Entrepreneurship is the same curse. You wake up, one of the first things that you think about is your business. What am I going to do? Especially if you're not making money yet. If you're not making money yet, you're literally up late at night wondering how the hell you're going to make this work. What did I get myself? All of these thoughts, and you're going at it alone, right? Is what it feels like anyways, right? Because you're just like, I've got to create solutions for myself. And so I just don't think people really fully, truly understand the level of commitment, stress, discipline, hardships that business owners have to go through on a day-to-day basis. And if employees actually truly understood that, they wouldn't be that another headache in some cases, right? Because you have your core group that are amazing employees that make your life way easier. And then you have the bottom 10 or 20% that call in sick, that make excuses, that complain about how much they get paid, but yet they're the first one to call in sick.
First one to clock out.
First one, yeah, they want to clock out 10, 15 minutes early. It's a ghost town at their desk at 4:50 when it's not even 5 o'clock yet, but yet they're the first. You see what I'm saying? So if those people understood what it was like, they wouldn't put themselves in a situation where they're causing an additional stress to the entrepreneur. They would figure out how to take something off their plate.
I'll tell you what, and I agree with that, except for the fact that it's kind of 80-20. It's like, because, I've said this for years, every time I speak, or it's like every person, every household is a business. They are managing money coming in. They've got their income. They're managing their expenses. They're managing their utilities.
Should be treated like a business, analyzed like a business.
And that's the problem, right? It's like we all are little microcosms of small businesses.
Mm.
Every household in America.
I like that.
But they don't think about it like that.
Mm.
And if they ran their home like a business, how much more successful they would be if they got it, right? Because they need to switch from being a victim and an employee mentality.
Yep.
Not that they're the same, okay? I'm not trying to say that every employee isn't a victim, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and
I get it.
To be an owner, and it's like you own your processes, you own whatever revenue you've got coming into your household, you own it. Then you set your budget, and it goes back exactly what we were talking to you about before. Even it comes down to the envelope theory, the envelope budget. That is owning. That's now you're a business owner. You're a household. Mm. You're running your household in a budget. You're starting to – you pay yourself, you put aside some savings, and now you're starting to accumulate wealth, right?
Well, then if you have kids, it's almost like that. It's almost like employees,
they're
right?
Your employees.
Parents should realize how hard it is to get employees to actually follow through and systemize things because it's hard to get kids to do
it's
you know? And so
and
they,
it's still
they should
a dream.
Understand the struggle, right? Because it really is kind of the same.
Dude, I like that a lot because at the end of the day, you I mean, there's only so long that you can run a business in the red before the business is out of business, right? In other words, if you run your house like a business and you're racking up credit card debt, doing all that, you know, you got $5,000 a month coming in, but you got, you know, months where $7,000 or $8,000's going out, but you're sliding it on the credit card. That wouldn't be the right way to run a business because the business wouldn't be around long term if you operated it like that forever. So if you look at your $60,000 a year household income, as in that's the revenue that your business is generating, and you've got $3,000 in expenses for your business, right? Your life. then you've got $3,000 left to pay taxes, save, you know, put money aside for emergencies, vacations, whatever, investing, you know, all of those things. I really like that you brought that up like that, because a lot of people
should use it to relate to their boss or their business that they work for, if they're not a business owner.
Yeah.
Right? They should.
You hope that they would, but it's just, I think a lot of it is just education, right? They don't.
But nobody's educating them.
Never heard it. Nobody's educating them. But that's the truth. And I think a lot of the problems in our country could be alleviated if people started managing their lives like a business. Like, you know, not to get political.
Yeah.
But, you know, what happened when Trump came in office, right? The economy boomed. Okay. I mean, right now our unemployment rate is like 13, 14%. But you go back 30 days and it was 2.9.
Yeah. Right.
Where it's hovered the lowest of all time. Because now we have someone running a big government like a business.
Yeah.
And now it's all been shot to hell, obviously. Yeah. But it's like, it's just, I mean,
it's a numbers game. They're looking at the numbers and evaluating the numbers. I need this one to go down and this one to go up.
He's like renegotiating deals with other countries and, hey, what's more fair? Like, how can you win? But we still win too. And you know what I mean? Like deregulating things that just cost a lot of money and don't really do our country a whole lot of good, you know? And so that's the things that I've kind of liked. And if you understand business, you look at somebody that is running like a business, like, okay,
but we have too many people out there saying, business is bad.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? Business is bad.
Yeah, capitalism's bad.
Yeah, capitalism's bad.
Right.
Why? Don't tell me my family, my personal family is a business because business is evil. You know, it's just give me free stuff.
Right.
Rather than, you know, let me grow it.
Yeah. Let me ask
you this. Put a cap on me.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think that it's not taught in schools? Do you believe that there's some conspiracy behind the fact? Because let's be
maybe
real.
Maybe it is, dude. We just didn't go to school.
Yeah. Maybe it was. Jim's like, I don't know what.
He's like, take
you must have missed that class. And I'm I was in the sticks smoking weed as a punk kid. Damn it. I missed the one class that mattered.
Right?
But for real, though, there's a few things that really matter in this world, right? Like understanding money. You know, understanding taxes in your tax bracket.
They're definitely not teaching it soon enough. Like our kids should be learning that stuff in grade school. You know, some of the basic stuff on budgeting and some finance of the basics and things like that.
Sally had $3 and bought 3 lollipops for $1 a piece. How much money does she have left? Nothing. Sally's broke as shit. You know, like, have stuff like that, right? You know, Sally's got to get back to work and get a second job if she wants to maintain that Sally lifestyle with the hair extensions.
Fix. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Sally, Sally's bike's broken, but she spent $3 on lollipops. Was that smart? No. She should have fixed her bike and been responsible so that she could play with her friends.
What a great question. Why we don't know that.
But, yeah, I mean, look, they're not educating people how credit works. So people's credit goes to shit. People don't know how to manage money. You know, there's so many various things. Don't know how to do their own taxes. Even, like,
well, here's
every
the thing.
Year they're confused.
I agree with that, but I'm just going to throw this plug out, this shameless plug for all the moms and dads out there.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, that is why you can't rely on the schools to teach your kids anything.
Mm.
That's why if you are a parent,
if something's
don't
important.
Wait for your don't wait thinking that the public education or even a private education is going to teach your kids the most important things. They're not. It's got to come from you.
Yeah.
Mm. You as a parent need to step up and be a parent. And if you love your kids, you're going to take time to, one, be with them.
Yeah.
And number two, teach them the things that really, really matter. Yeah, you can sit down and play a board game with them or go out and throw the ball, which you should.
Yeah.
That's
another level of connection.
Yes,
right.
And that's good. But if you don't take the time to sit down and teach them real life and you're relying on society or school or the media to teach them, your kids are screwed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
Then they're going to end up learning the hard way through making mistakes. Right.
Yeah.
Nobody taught about credit. So I ended up having to go through a bad credit situation to pop out the other side. And now I realize how important it is to have my credit be good at all times, even if I don't need it immediately, that it's just there as a backup. It's just, again, I didn't get taught this stuff from my mom and dad, right? Like, nobody talks about this stuff.
There's still a lot we should probably know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And so, like, you know, you can't rescue your kids from everything and teach them everything because you don't know everything. But at the same time, you know, you should be trying to teach them what you do know. You know, like, you know,
the mistakes that you made.
I've had conversations with my kids, you know, like, you know, hey, man, yeah, that, you know, that shirt you're wearing probably only costs 30 cents to make it, but then it has to get shipped here. And then, you know, the big box retailer has to buy it, and someone is getting paid to unbox it. And that's why these things cost this much money, is we got to turn the profit, you know? And so you kind of have to teach them some of these basic things so they start understanding, like, how things work.
I had a buddy, I know we're running out of time. I had a buddy, he, two things. One is not just our kids, but our employees. We can't just expect our employees to kind of like usurp knowledge by osmosis, just being around us. If we can take a minute and just sit down with them and explain these things to them, they'll understand our world a little better.
And it empowers them a lot of times.
It empowers them and it endears them to us. They're like, man, he cared and I get it. He's this could be tough. This could be like right now with the coronavirus, these are tough days for a lot of employers. A lot of my clients, I've gotten 40, 50 client, you know, calls from clients basically, dude, I got to shut my doors.
Like, what do I do?
Yeah. And that's a whole other story. But the best story I've heard was one of my buddies. He went to his kids. I guess it could work with employees too, right?
Yeah.
But he got his paycheck and he cashed it. And he put it in a box. And he went home and he got his kids around and he dumped the box out and cashed. He's like, okay, guys, this is how much money we have this month. Our house payment is this. So you guys count out our house payment, and they put it over in this pile. And okay, you know, well, we got to pay for lights, and they put that down. And it was just this visual masterpiece of a lesson. And it was like, okay, and what do you guys want? And so the kids took money and said, yeah, we want to go buy this and that. And so, okay, go ahead and take it, put it in your pile. And then at the end, he was like, okay, the money was gone. And he was like, okay, who wants to eat? They're like, what?
Yeah.
Okay, no, who's hungry?
Yeah.
Who's hungry now?
Yeah.
And so do you really think that bike over there, Johnny, would you rather eat tonight and for the month, or would you rather have that bike? Are you going to eat that bike? You know, those tires are kind of rough.
Yeah.
And so, and it was super impactful. And so now, fast forward 15, 20 years, those kids still talk about that exact lesson.
That's something
every
we'll never
time.
Forget.
That's amazing.
But to you know, I don't know, and we don't want to tell all our employees all the finances and the stuff. But I'll tell you what, it helps employees to understand the expenses. Yeah. They don't have to understand all the income, but they have to if they understand the expenses.
We're very, very, very open with our employees about a lot of things because we want them to be with us and go along the journey with us, and we want to like we really, really, really care. You know, we want people to be with us for a long time. And we want to build something so great and so big that their dreams can fit with inside of our dreams and so that they could live a good life. Nobody wants to I can't say nobody. We don't want to surround ourselves with a bunch of people that are broke, depressed, angry, have a victim mentality.
Why not?
You know, all this stuff.
That's awesome.
But, you know, there are employers out there that are just like, it's a body. It's a person. Like, I could replace you $12 an hour, boom, boom, boom. Like, you're just more of a social security number than you are an individual with a first and last name, right?
100%.
And so
to touch on kind of what he said about sharing with your employees, a lot of employers don't want to because they're afraid, like, oh, they're going to know too much and then go off and do their own thing. I'm going to lose an employee. But a lot of times if you make them a part of the crusade, the mission, like they're actually more loyal to you, man. They just want to step up even more. And then they actually understand like, okay, man, like I'm doing more. I probably could go ask for a raise or, you know, they know why they can't get one if it's not in the budget for one because they need to, you know, improve in some areas. And so I think it creates a lot more loyalty in your employees when you do kind of share to kind of
some information, right? They feel like they're a part of the business rather than just, you know, an employee.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever want an employee to feel like just an employee, like they're just there and they're easily replaced. I don't ever want anybody to ever feel like that. I want people to feel appreciated. I know I want to feel appreciated. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of our basic human needs is to be seen, heard, recognized, appreciated.
Yeah.
These things, again, all we are is just human beings and you're employing human beings. And these are common human being traits that you could implement with inside of your business to make somebody, again, just by recognizing them. You know, we do that within our Slack channel or on an email. When we get a positive review, we screenshot it, and we send it out in an email to everybody else, and we highlight the individual. Hey, look at Andrew, or look at Trevor.
You guys are amazing at that. You really are.
Look at Trevor. He got a positive review. This is who we are, and this is what we're about. He went above and beyond, and he didn't have to do this, this, and this, but he did it for that customer. And this is who we are, right? And so when everybody sees this individual getting recognized and appreciated for going above and beyond, by default, what does everybody else want to do?
That's right.
Step up and be recognized.
They're like, holy shit. Like, you're telling me I can have my name being blasted in front of the entire company on an email if I potentially go above and beyond? It's just a common human need, is to be recognized and appreciated. And I just don't think enough employers are taking the time to recognize the people that are doing a wonderful job for them and showing appreciation. There's two things that should come out of this whole coronavirus thing. Entrepreneurs should appreciate every customer that they get, and they should appreciate their employees that help service their customers, right? Like, now that those things have been ripped from us, like, hey, sorry, your employees have to work from home. The office is a lot quieter than what it normally is, and it sucks, you know? And so you can now grow a new appreciation for having that life with inside of your walls and inside of your business, as well as there's a lot of businesses that wishes they could get one customer right now or two, you know, the faucets turned off. Mm-hmm. And you got to the point where you didn't appreciate it anymore because it was, you expect the faucet to be on now because it's been on for a 10-year run or whatever it is.
And it's helping. You're entitled. People.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're expecting the faucet to continue to be on rather than appreciating it being on based upon the fact that your employees are on the front lines doing the work, that's serving the customer, making the customers happy. So we get the reviews and we get a look at that and say, holy shit. You know, that's when it comes full circle.
We've talked about before too, man. Like, you take care of your customers, they'll take care of your people, right? They'll want to step up for you more. And where there is a lot of companies that are going to have to hit that reset button and start over, like, that's just a core value or a standard one that you're going to have to get back to. Is this, you know, you have to have a lot of gratitude for those people that are going to show back up and work for you. And you need to take really good care of them and sacrifice for them so that they will for your customers and take care of your customers. That's how you have to rebuild your company, man.
Yeah.
You know, if you're one of the companies that has to hit the reset button.
And so. I just hope that people don't drift away from this experience too much, right? We've talked about that before, in terms of.
Everybody needs reminders. We need it at times, you know.
Yeah.
That's one of the good things about our companies. We're there to remind each other, like, hey, we need to do this for them and highlight them. And, you know,
it's like, so. You need a good partner, is like a good wife that'll kick you in the nuts, you know?
So I screenshot some of those reviews and send them to Trent. I'm like, dude, we got another one. He's like, I'm going to send it out right now. And so, you know, like, we just bounce it off each other and highlight them.
Dude, they deserve it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it comes down to. But at the end of the day, I mean, business is very, very difficult. You can make it easier on yourself by just taking care of people, recognizing them, and appreciating them.
Yeah.
That really can happen. It's just, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, because they sign the check or they cut the check, they expect so much, and it's kind of one-sided. Well, I pay you. They want their employees to go the extra mile, but the employer doesn't go the extra mile. Mm-hmm. It's only a one-way street. Because they signed this, man, I can't get any good employees, man. Nobody goes the extra mile anymore. Well, when's the last time you went the extra mile for your employees? Yeah. When's the last time you took them out to lunch or took them bowling or you did a team activity?
Gave them a little $5 gift card. It's like, it doesn't have to be big.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Right?
It's little things. Recognition and appreciation.
Appreciation. Even if it is,
hey, coffee on me tomorrow. Here you go. Here's $10. You know, like, it can make a world of difference. And I'm telling you, as an entrepreneur, you want to do everything that you possibly can to make your life easier. That's one thing that you could do to make your life easier, because they will start going above and beyond because they're watching you do it. You're basically leading by example, right?
Well, before we wrap up, though, because Jim's not like this nationwide attorney, so it's not like you guys, if you're in New Jersey, should be hitting him up for legal advice or anything like that. But you do have an app, right, that you guys a legal
the
app
one
and
law
stuff
app.
that anybody can go app. And utilize in order to, like, you know, form trusts and wills and things like that, right?
So yeah, so shine some light on that real quick.
So the app is – no, thanks. Yeah, the app is it's basically just a tool. It was designed to help people in rural areas get legal advice, because, like, some of your guys, they might live, you know, out in rural areas.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you don't get the same attention as you do if you live in the big city.
Of course.
And so it was just a way so people in rural areas can contact attorneys and get the same advice that
the big,
big dogs are getting, you know, mm-hmm. and have those same resources and still a face-to-face where it's kind of like a FaceTime. You know, you go on the app, it's one law, just one L-A-W. You download it, you register, and a map comes up of the United States. And then it just, it kind of geofences around you, and it shows you what attorneys are on the app and available. Mm-hmm. You just hit that, and all of a sudden you can just connect with them. You can ask them questions, have a face-to-face with them.
So do you pay an invoice after that? Or
no, it's all free. Okay. So I get on every day. People hit me up and ask me questions, and I try to do the best I can. And then if it evolves into something, it's like,
of course.
Well, you actually need more work.
Let's hop on a call.
Shoot me your email. Let me send you over the retainer, you know, and then we can formalize it.
People need to know how valuable that is, because ignorance doesn't matter in a court of law, man. Like, look at the lengths we're going to with our credit repair company, as we've been rolling it out with you, right? Like, we're like, what's compliant? Like, we got to make sure not only are we doing things different to go above and beyond and be better than all the other things out there, but and give people an actually too. Great service, but we got to make sure nothing come back on us, because if we get sued even for the littlest thing, like, dude, it can put you out of business like that. Yeah. And they don't care if you're like, oh, man, I didn't know that law.
Yeah.
You know what? And we've all been guilty of that if we're business owners, right? And so as you're evolving in business, people should be looking into legal services like that and making sure they're connecting with people and getting some questions answered as they're rolling things out.
So. Yeah. Let's talk about, just real quick, based upon our recent experience, what are some of the things that business owners need to be looking out for, or I guess not looking out for, what are some of the things that all businesses should have in place in terms of the employee packet that they have them sign? There's like ADA, and what are just a couple of the like two or three things that every business owner maybe should have when they onboard a new employee so that they are protected? Because guys, we just went through an issue and had to shell out some money because, again, we weren't in the wrong. The choice was either to fight it and spend more money, or we just settle and give money.
Yeah. But I mean, we could have won all day long, but it's like, what's really worth
our time and money to fight something, right?
But we could have avoided it by having one little extra step in our employee.
Yeah. So what are a couple things that they should have in an employee packet? First off, they probably should have an employee packet just in general, right?
Yeah. So I would can I break it up into two different parts?
Sure.
One for the employer, the small businessman, or the big businessman. You want to make sure a couple of things. You want to make sure, because an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, right? Mm-hmm. Just don't pay the pound. It's just not worth it. So you want to make sure that you're registered with the state if you're required to be registered, you know.
Registered with the state for what?
Like the Secretary of State or the Division of Commerce or Corporations,
you're talking about,
whatever you are.
Just when you set up an entity? Setting up.
Set up your entity. Set it up right. Like,
okay, gotcha.
Like if you have partners, have an operating agreement.
Yeah.
Just because that is where people fight. And it's so – partners are worse than divorces with a spouse. It's like once it's spoiled, and it's so nice to be able to open up, oh, here's our problem. Well, you open up to page 10, and there's the answer, rather than going through litigation for 2 years. So just take some time, do that right, get your reporting done, make sure you get your withholdings, make sure you're doing the reporting that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then from the employer side, when you hire employees, there's all these – you know, people right now come in all different flavors, you know.
Damn straight they do.
There's, you know, there's 19
some nasty,
different.
There's some black licorice flavors.
Yeah.
They should have never made black licorice. It's disgusting. Keep it red licorice. Okay.
But people are all flavors.
I know. Some people love it. I hate it, but that's me.
And you just don't know what you're going to get in a person. And it's okay.
And they change real quick.
They change quick. Sometimes people are great in the interview, and then afterwards, you know, you find out they're a serial killer. You know, you just don't know.
So put the serial killer serial business killer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I married an axe murderer. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get in a few short minutes. So a lot of states have provisions in there. Like Utah's an at-will state. A lot of states are at-will states. You can fire anybody for any reason.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a 90-day kind of a free look period, and make sure you utilize it. Be quick to hire, or sorry, slow to hire, quick to fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the number one rules. But when you go through the onboarding package, if possible, you want to have some form of an employee agreement that sets out the rules and the framework.
Okay.
You know, it's like, look, if people are creative and they're creating a spreadsheet or a flow or a process, like let's say, for example, someone's an office manager, okay, and you hire her to be your office manager.
Yeah.
And to be an office manager, she's got to do X, Y, and Z. And
these
she
duties.
Has people that report to her. So if she creates a spreadsheet to help her in that process, and it's easy, and it's a whatever it is, a system or a process, and then she leaves and you keep her spreadsheet in her process, she's going to come back to you and say, this is my spreadsheet and my process. It's worth $100,000. Hmm. And this is what made your company what it is today. So if that happens, to avoid that outcome, I should say, you want to make sure your employees sign something that basically say, you know, what they do on your dime in fulfillment of their job is work for hire. They're just fulfilling what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they might come up with something that makes the process easier, that's great. It's yours.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you paid them to do the job. And so.
And they also have access to like all your data and all your customers and all your customer data. And that's all valuable to a company as
well. That's right.
So you got to have those things also built in there. It's like, you can't leave with this data. You can't go you and take this and remarket things to yourself or sell it to other companies.
You don't want
someone. Because I see that shit happen.
Yeah.
It's happened to us in the past.
You don't want to avoid them from being able to get gainful employment when they leave you.
Right.
But you don't want them to take all your stuff.
Exactly.
Right. All the intellectual property that you spent time and money developing to give you a competitive advantage.
So when people see these non-compete clauses in these employee agreements, it's to protect their data and their processes and their creativity and all these things. Like, it's not to stop you going working somewhere else, even if it's a similar field. It's just to stop you from taking that valuable
and
asset
using
away.
Your asset against you, right?
Exactly.
To compete against you.
Totally.
So that's part of it. You've got your non-compete, your non-solicitation. You don't want them poaching and soliciting other people to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to not, if you can, you want them to sign something that's a non-disparagement, where it's like they're not going to go out and talk trash against you.
Totally.
Like, and slander you, drag you through the mud. Now, sometimes truth is always a defense to slander and love. So you can say whatever you want if it's true.
Right.
Right. But the hope would be that they're not going to go out and talk trash about you just because you fired them because they came in drunk, you know, mm-hmm. 3 days in a row, and you asked them not to politely the first one. You got a little more stern the second one.
Yeah.
And then the third time, it's like three strikes, you're out. But yet they'll go back and slander you on social media and all that kind of garbage.
Yeah.
So you want to avoid that.
Get those things done, man. Like, don't.
Also,
don't be Mr. Nice Guy and let this stuff go forever. I mean, this is stuff that should just be handled right up front when people walk in the door to work for you.
Well, they're not going to. I mean, we can speak from experience, you know, me and Kel, in terms of that. And I'm sure Jim has seen it, you know, many, many times over his years. Yeah, he's seen it with us. Right. And so just because the you know, arguments aren't valid doesn't mean that they can't get. Again, it leaves it up to interpretation at that point, where there is an argument on the other side. But if there's a piece of paper stating otherwise, then there is no argument, right? It is really what it comes down to.
And there's no excuse to find, you know, these things out for yourself, because we just told you about Jim's app where you guys can go and connect with attorneys and spend a little time getting these things done right.
Yeah,
just ask them. And you know, interesting developing areas is the ADA, right? Like, providing reasonable accommodations for your employees that may suffer from a disability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, as an employer, you have a right to understand what disability it is.
Mm-hmm.
You have a right to have your employees substantiate it. But once they substantiate it and you understand what is happening, you have a duty to provide reasonable accommodations for them. And this is a hot area right now in employment law. I mean, employers are getting sued left and right over this because they just don't know. It comes back to education.
Well, that's the issue. That's what I had a problem with. It's like, okay, there's all of these agencies protecting individuals that are out there in the workforce, but there's not a bunch of agencies protecting the business owners, telling them, oh, by the way, here's your rights, here's this, here's what you should be doing. It just doesn't come with an instruction manual. So most of the time, you learn through pain, right?
It's tuition, right?
Yeah.
It's expensive education.
Yeah.
So I would say anyone listening, you know, take a few minutes, pull up some things, educate yourself, talk to, you know, see if you can get a hold of a legal advisor that you trust and ask them questions to help you get taken care of because it's worth it.
Yeah,
it is worth it.
You know,
I like your saying on that too, like an ounce of preventative effort to save a pound, you know?
So yeah. Or don't step over the dollar to pick up a nickel, right. You know, it's like, be smart with your money. I mean, you work hard for it, but that's part of the package, right? It's got to create your wealth, but then you got to protect your wealth and then transition out as smoothly as possible.
Yeah,
but it starts with education. Yeah. And you guys are the kings of it.
Yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on today, man. And I know it was kind of last minute. We're in here talking about other things. We're like, hey, jump on the podcast.
Yeah.
And dude, I think there's a ton of value in there for people listening.
I really do.
You know, like, dude, just... You know, there's so much you save your bacon so much by doing a little bit of preventative and connecting with attorneys, making sure your processes are legal and set up to protect you. So check out that app, people.
Yep, absolutely. So we'll read. We'll end it like we normally do. We'll just read a quick review here. Subject: can't get enough. I can't get enough of RBO content. If you're hungry to learn, grow, listen to this podcast, cash in on some of the free nuggets. Keep it up, Trevor and Kilo G.
That's right.
You guys are killing it. That was from Iron Monkey 117. So we appreciate the review.
That's my rap name, Jim.
Kilo G.
I love it. So next time you beatbox, bro, you get Kilo G on the mic, dude. No, I'm just joking.
How do I get this thing off? How do I get
exactly? Like, he wants to make love to that mic if he's going to beatbox in it. So.
Guys, if you got value out of today's podcast, make sure you leave us a review. Share us with friends, family, anybody else that you think could get value out of the information that we provide. Make sure that you do check us out and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're going to start focusing on that a little bit more. So support us there if you can. Guys, do us a favor. Have a kick-ass day. Keep grinding. Keep hustling. We'll end up all where we need to be if we do that. You know. So take care.
Take care.